It, yes, now it works.
Perfect.
Again?
Now.
Oh, that is too loud. Okay. Is it better now? Thank you very much. So, we were coming from that idea that we have a bunch of LVMIR files that we feed into Org, and Org would figure out which of them we need to run the code for the symbol that we were asking for. And it would take these materialization units and compile them to native objects with the LVM target for the with the LVM backend for the target that we need. And then it links them in memory and loads them for execution so that eventually we get back the address of the symbol that we did ask for. And how does that work in practice? If we have a hello world example like this with a main function and a print statement, we can compile LVMIR for that with Clang in this case and feed it into LLI, the LLVM interpreter. This is a program that uses OrgTit under the hood. And if we run that like this, it looks great. It seems to work as long as we look at small examples. So if we take something bigger, like BZIP2, for example, it's a simple compression program that is often used for benchmarks. This consists of like 13 C files and one make file, and the make file describes the build process for that. Around 200 lines of code. If we want to, usually we would just run make and get an executable and run that executable. But if we want to get the IR code for the C files and run this through LLI, we need to do something here, right? So we could say, well, let's tell all the C compile commands to emit LVM instead of binary. And that works pretty well for the first seven targets. But then, oh, we want to link a static archive. That's a bit of a problem because we did not emit the object files. And there's nothing to link. And even if we tried, LVMIR has no counterpart for linking archives or anything like that. So there's not so much we can do. Except, well, we already have almost all the bitcode files we need. So we could just compile the driver code manually. And now we have all the code for the main program. And we can run this in LLI. It gets a bit more complicated, but it still works. If we execute it like this, great. That could be a good approach, right? Or is it really so nice? Well, there's a few issues here. Let's start with one that is maybe not so obvious. One of the problems is that we load all code at startup. And why is that? Well, before we enter main, we have to get all the symbols somehow, because we need to figure out where is main and where is the code for it. And also we have to allocate memory for global variables, because main will think, oh, that must be accessible, right? And we also have to initialize all these global variables, because we come from a world where everything used to be static and compiled ahead of time. There is a way to get the first two from thin LTO summaries that we can get from the compiler, and I showed that in a talk long, long ago on the LLVM dev meeting. But the third one is really a problem, and it won't go away, because initialization can call arbitrary code in our executable, so we cannot just generate that ahead of time. So the status quo really is we load all code at startup. We'll be coming back to this in a sec. Let's go first to the previous slide again and see what was maybe another problem here. Well, of course, the emit LLVM was the big problem, right? We cannot just do that for real-world projects. We have static archives, we have dynamic libraries, we want to pass linker flags. All of this would not work together with emitting only LLVM code. So all in all, the observation is not necessary from this only, but also from here. We need this build process, and it's quite complicated because our platforms are a bit messy and the build process is what holds everything together. When we look at other projects and how they build their code, for example, Julia or Common Lisp implementation CLASP that use OrcGIT, they are built on the dynamic execution model, and they bring everything. They have everything included that needs to be done to build the code. They have first-class JIT support. But C, C++, Rust, Swift, they don't have that. And most of all, we are missing build system integration. So what could we do? Well, the idea is that we could build a LLVM plugin to somehow connect these two worlds, because plugins work very well with LLVM-based compilers, and they're easy to be used with existing build systems. The project is on GitHub, and the code is here on the slide, and the idea is this. We hook in the compiler pipeline very early, early as in before we do a lot of work with the code. And we cut out all the code and put it somewhere, like on disk maybe. And then we inject the JIT loader instead of it. And otherwise we just compile everything as regular into a kind of shallow binary after that. If we do that for our BSIP2 example, it looks a bit like that. We pass the plugin in a CFlex here, and this will obviously cause no problem as long as we use a compiler like Clang, because it will not break our build. And this works not only with Make, but with CMake Cargo. If you want to have a few samples, there's CI GitHub Actions with one example for each project. And that should be... Yes, everything here. So back to the idea. That was the first part. What about the next steps? We cut out code and inject the JIT loader. How would that look? Well, let's say we have a function like this. BSIP2 compress block looks like that. It's a lot bigger, but that didn't fit on the slide. And now we would replace that function body with a JIT loader. So that would maybe look like something like this. We have three blocks, an entry, a materialize, and a call block. In the entry, we say, oh, did we already materialize the code for this function? If so, we go to call and just invoke it. Otherwise, we go to the materialize block and call into the runtime. And instead of requesting a function by name, we request a number here and build an ID system around that. That's basically like thin LTO summaries have IDs, global unique IDs that identify functions instead of names, because that's a lot easier. And we can just store all this information that we need to identify which file it is in and what code we need to load into the static binary. this code doesn't live in thin air. We also have to inject a few more information because, for example, the bitcode file that we store the code in. And we append a global static initializer that will register this file with the runtime so that it knows where it is. Regarding the last point, what do I mean with a shallow binary? How would that look? If we look at the call graph of our BSIP2 example, it looks about like this. We have a main function over here, and all the other things are functions that are reachable. That's a regular executable. Boxes are functions, and the arrows are calls. And now imagine we replace all function bodies with a JIT loader. Well, then we also remove all the calls, right? And it would look like that. Almost, because we also run dead code elimination, of course. And then it would run. Then it would look like this. What remains are the exported entry point of our translation units. Like that's like the public functions in our C files. And this is great for the ID system because it's a lot fewer entries than before. And it's also great for ABI compatibility because our translation units from the outside stay as they are. They don't differ from regular compilation units, and we can mix and match these with regular ones. So if something doesn't work yet, we can just say, okay, let's not auto-JIT this object file. We just keep the original one in this case. Exactly. And all the remaining functions are basically really just symbols with a little stub attached that would load the actual code. And that is something we see in the binary size. The original binary is 190 kilobytes on the left side, and the auto-JIT compiled one is 43 only. And it's important to note that this is something like that the size reduction is really only in the text section or maybe exception data or something like that, but not in a data section, because this is another idea in the concept that we just leave all the data, all the global variables in there. Because that means that we can solve our status quo. We don't have to build these things on startup anymore. We can implement real laziness because all the things that we need up front at startup are already in the static executable. In the project, there is a benchmark mode or some scripts that run benchmarks. It's about outputs things like that. It shows binary sizes. It shows like average compile times. It doesn't get much faster yet because LLVM compile times are not such a big part when you compile C or C++. And runtimes are a bit slower, of course, because we have to materialize this code on the fly. But it's not that big of a difference. If we look at the runtimes, there is a proof of concept release. This is really like super early stage. Don't expect anything to work. But there's two types of runtimes. One, static out-of-process runtime, where you can link a static archive. That would implement the runtime functions materialize and register, and that would talk to a daemon auto-JIT-D process to do all the JIT compilation, because this is pretty heavy. Like the runtime here is pretty big. It brings a whole LLVM compiler. And the dynamic in-process runtime is just a shared library, but that makes issues sometimes. Like, for example, Rust developers don't want to link libc or C++ in their code and things like that. There's also issues when we compile LLVM binaries with that because it confuses symbols. And last but not least, there is the pass plugin auto-JIT SO. With that, I would say that's kind of a novel approach for running org-JIT at scale, because you can, in principle, build projects of any size with that and not just small examples. At least I don't know any other project that does that so far. Yes, we reduce binary size and compile time ideally. One idea is that incremental builds might be able to avoid relinks, because if you only change the implementation of a function, then the actual object file will not change and the linker doesn't need to do anything actually. We just load a different bitcode file from disk. And we can mix and match objects, so we don't have to do that for the whole program. We could say, there's something that doesn't work, okay, then let's don't do it, not do it here. And the real core part is really to leave global variables in the static executable so that we can support real laziness. Here's the project, and if you have questions, then we have 5 minutes. Yes.
Size because you have all the bitcode that lies on your file system and you need
yes.
to ship it with the application. So,
I don't know if this is really something for production actually.
Yeah.
But the point here is more like that if you reduce the binary size, then you also reduce the link size. And if you link huge binaries like Chromium or something, then link time is really huge. And if you link only a very tiny bit of it, then like the edit compile test cycle gets much smaller because you only link a few megabytes instead of a few gigabytes. Might be a benefit.
But you're postponing it. You're postponing it to the runtime, then when it starts to get compiled by the runtime.
Exactly. The idea is that the static executable has none of the actual code. It's just like a frame that is executable and knows where all the code is that it needs. And then when it starts, it will first of all initialize global variables and will call all these constructors. And for that, it will start loading code. And then it will enter main and go the regular code path.
Just to continue, this seems like a cross-platform compilation as well. So for example, if I compile with LLVM, I have an output, the LLVM IR, that is we are able to use it by any application we have. Basically, we don't need to compile it.
No, LLVM IR is not platform agnostic. It's really specific for the platform. Yeah. The question, right. The question was if this would be a cross-platform solution, but it is not because the IR is very specific to the platform. Yes.
If I understand correctly, you're now running the global constructor functions delayed or lazily instead of at startup?
Yes, the question is the global constructors need to be run. Yes, that's true. That doesn't work at compile time. And yes, this is just like every other code that runs.
But so does it still run before main start executing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes. Global constructors need to be run before main executes because main expects everything to be initialized. But in this concept, global constructors are not different than any other function calls. It's just calls into the runtime and it will find the code and materialize it and run it, yes. Please.
You've initially mentioned Julia and other languages that have like first-class JIT support.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair comparison? Because like if a language has first-class JIT support, it typically does tracing or some sort of like runtime optimizations, can also like invalidate code. So I think like it's a different idea than like what you're following here. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes, the question is if it's fair or reasonable to compare dynamic languages with statically compiled languages, and yes, it's not. It was more meant as a comparison in what other built systems are there for languages that use OrgJIT so far. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Please. Something about the overhead that you have for this dynamic loading of the source of compiling and injecting?
Yes, this, the question was what is the overhead for the dynamic loading, and it depends. It depends if you have endless small functions, for example, or if you have reasonable size functions, for example. And there's no threshold here implemented. It could all be done, but it's just an experiment so far. But for, like, this is a real code, BSIP2 is a real code, and here the runtime difference is not very big. But this is also a trick. Actually, it's bigger because this is using the TPDE backend for LLVM that is like very fast. But it's any time, just it's good for baseline chip. Peter?
We've made answers already, but the question on the chat is, how does LLVM auto JIT affect runtime performance of larger projects?
Can you say that again?
How does LLVM auto JIT affect runtime performance of larger projects?
Probably not so much. Probably like this. As I said, the difference is if the code is in many big functions or only small functions everywhere. Thank you. That's everything. You can ask me more questions in the hallway. Thank you very much.